From Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, this is the Todd Munt Show. I'm Charity Nebbe. Todd will be back next time. Sigmund Freud believed that in dreaming we fulfill our secret wishes. Carl Jung believed that we tap into a collective unconscious with our dreams. Psychologist Bill Domhoff thinks they're both wrong. Using a scientific approach to analyzing and codifying the elements of our dreams, Domhoff and his colleagues at the University of California at Santa Cruz are studying what we dream about, and maybe someday this research will help us answer the question, why do we dream? Bill, how do you collect information about people's dreams?
Well, we can collect it either in a sleep laboratory by awaking them at various times in the night, or we can have people write down their most recent dream in a classroom or lecture room setting. And thirdly, we receive very important dreams from people who, for their own reasons, write down their dreams regularly for days and months and even decades.
What's your most common source for the information?
I think that all three of those are about equal. I think for establishing a really scientific base, the most important dreams have been those collected in the sleep laboratory.
Yeah, it seems like with people who keep their own dream journals, these are a self-selecting group of people.
Right, they are. But the interesting thing is that once we have a solid foundation from the sleep lab and from asking as many people as possible about their dreams, they become the most interesting and valuable subjects because they are regularly remembering their dreams. And if we have enough different people writing down dreams over time, if we find certain regularities, even though they have very different motives, that is actually a very powerful research approach.
With the dreams that you collect in a classroom-type setting where you're asking people to remember their most recent dream, how do you know that what you're getting is accurate?
There is no way to know with any given one dream. But what you can know something about the sample of dreams. And let me give you a concrete example there. If we ask people the question, what do you dream about most frequently, aggression, friendliness, or sexuality? They will tell you, oh, I dream the most about friendliness, and the second most about sexuality, and the third most about aggression. In fact, the actual order is aggression, friendliness, and in a very distant third, anything with so much as a hug or a kiss. So the point is, I think I know what's in dreams generally, so I think that I can have a sense of when people are giving us false reports. Let me also say there that's actually a very good and complex question that involves a whole series of steps that start with collecting dreams from people in the laboratory. It then involves asking them again in the morning, well, what dreams did you tell me last night? And then you can compare what they remembered upon an immediate awakening with what they remember in the morning, and that starts to give you an idea of what kinds of dreams we tend to forget. So there's actually a series of steps that make me very confident that when somebody said, yeah, last night I had this certain dream, that they're being accurate. People don't censor their dreams, really. Dreams happen to people, and so they're amazed. They say, no, I can't believe this dream. I was flying, or I jumped off a roof, or I kicked my dog. And so they will tell you the darndest things. Now, here I'll give one final comment on this. The younger the person, the less likely I am to believe the report. And I actually believe that little children, under what essentially they see as a social pressure, I think they're often making up the dreams that they tell us.
Once you do get dreams that you know or you feel you can rely on, how do you break the dreams down so you can analyze them?
We break them down into a series of categories that correspond very closely with a play or with everyday life. Well, if you look at a lot of dreams, you soon see that they have a set of characters. That's the cast. They have a set of social interactions. They have a setting. There's emotions. And so we break the dream down precisely into those kind of categories. So if we look at characters, for instance, there's three general kinds of characters. There's human beings, there's animals, and there's creatures. And the most frequent of characters are human beings. Then you look and you say, what percentage of the human characters are male or female? What percentage are family members? What percentage are strangers? And then you can build from there. And let me give you a quick example. One of the things that we often do is to figure out the animal percent, which is just simply means of all the characters that appear in a person's dreams or in the dreams from a group of people, what percentage of those characters are animals? Now, why that's interesting is that with little children, the animal percent is very high, much as high as 30 or 40% of the characters. By the time we're teenagers, it's 4, 5, or 6%. On the other hand, if we look at tribal societies, we find the animal percent is much higher than the American percent. Now, all of that is very mundane, but it starts to tell us something. If we have an indicator that varies by age and varies by culture and that fits with what, quotes, makes sense to us, then we start to say, well, there's some, might be some meaning in dreams. They might connect with the waking world. And in fact, our general finding is that dreams are more or less continuous with our waking thoughts and concerns.
So tell me, what are the most common things that we dream about then?
Well, I think that we do dream most. We dream about unfinished business. We dream about some of its wishes, some of its fears, some of its things that we have to remember to do tomorrow, some of its unfinished business from the past. Why didn't I do better in school? Why didn't I make the winning basket in a game? Why did my boyfriend and I break up? So it's that kind of unfinished business. What's striking about dreams is that maybe as many as 40% of them will have what we call an aggressive interaction, which means anything from a sneer to saying, I don't like you, I won't let you go to the show with us, I don't like how you look, on up to hitting somebody, chasing somebody. So there's a lot of aggression in dreams. And what's striking to us in our systematic work is the fact that aggression is the factor in dreams that varies the most by age, by gender, by culture, and indeed by individuals. So it's kind of a very interesting thread running through dreams. The other thing that's striking about dream content is something we call misfortunes. And misfortunes happen in one-third of dreams. Now, a misfortune can be anything from somebody dies to as mundane as I couldn't find my key, the lock wouldn't work, the bridge broke. All these kinds of things that go wrong happen very frequently in dream. Now, here when I say that, I should immediately qualify because many of the listeners will say, gee, that, I don't think that fits my dream life. There are individual differences, and there are some people that will have a lot more aggression and less friendliness. There are those variations.
Do you categorize dreams into different types? What you were just describing with the things that go wrong is something that I've called an anxiety dream for a long time. Do you have different categories like that?
We don't use categories for types because most dreams fit into more than one category. So if you try to talk about a wishful dream or an anxiety dream, that's too global to obtain any real reliability and accuracy. And indeed, it doesn't turn out to have a whole lot of usefulness because all those things can happen in one dream. It starts out wishful, it turns anxious, etc. So my point would be, in terms of your mentioning anxiety dreams, is that if we look at the emotions in dreams, what's striking is that they're so overwhelmingly negative. Now, here it also becomes more interesting because, in fact, if you ask people about the dream, they say, oh, it's a pretty nice dream, wasn't so bad. But in the dream, they said, I was being chased by this guy, I was scared to death, then I felt guilty that I hit him back. And then so you code and you say, boy, there's anxiety in this dream, there's fear, there's guilt. And then you say, well, how was that dream? That wasn't too bad. So there's actually can be then a discrepancy between our coding, our own coding of the dreams, and how the people react to them upon awakening, or how they regard their dreams. And here I might say what's interesting is that even people, many people that will often have negative things in their dreams, they'll say, well, I like my dreams. They're kind of exciting, or they're adventure, or they make me curious. So even though they'll say, gee, I have these bad dreams, they'll still say, ah, they're all right. So there's a lot of variation between how we code the dreams and how people subjectively regard them later.
When you look at dreams among different groups of people, children or adults, men, women, what kind of variations do you see?
Well, one I've mentioned, which is aggression. Another one is animals. Let's go to gender. There are small but consistent differences between men and women that fit in our society, that fit with their interests. Women are more likely to mention the color of something. They're more likely to mention the kind of clothing. They're more mentioned, you know, he had red hair or she had long hair. There's that kind of attention to detail in their dreams. The other differences, though, are one is very understandable, and that is if we look at all the kinds of aggression that are in a person's dreams, half of those aggressions are what we call physical for men, but only one-third for women. And by physical aggressions, I mean a chase, you know, breaking or stealing somebody's property, capturing them, murdering them. So there's a big physical aggression difference by gender. It's also very interesting, everywhere in the world, men's dreams, in terms of the characters, two-thirds of the characters are other men. But the women's dreams are different in that they're half men and half women. We don't know why that is, but it's something we find very consistently. We find it in young children. So there are those kinds of gender differences. Surprisingly, with children, and this is one of the most controversial things that I could say, and everybody will say it's not true, but this is based on laboratory research, little children's dreams are much more mundane. They don't have much aggression and friendliness and so on in them until they're 10, 11, 12, and indeed 13, before they're having more adult-like kinds of dream. But generally, I'd say the answer to your question is that the dreams vary culturally, gender, personality, in ways that are continuous with the waking life of the person in their society, or how their gender is conceptualized in their given society, and so on.
Bill, we've talked about the fact that we dream about a lot of things that we experience every day in real life, and that there are these patterns among certain groups of people. How much can you tell about a person by looking at their dreams?
Well, I think I can tell what I call their conceptions and their concerns. I don't think I can tell anything really about their personality and as measured by personality tests. I don't think I can necessarily, you know, give some kind of a clinical diagnosis or anything like that. But if I have a lot of dreams from somebody and I look that they dream far more about siblings than our norms, and that's very important there. We do know what the typical American dream's about. And if you're, let's take a strong case, if you're double the norms on some factor, that probably shows that's a concern of yours. Let me give you an example from a real-world study that was really a beauty for us. A young man who had written down his dreams one the summer of his senior year. Then he, in college, he wrote down his dreams again while he was in a class on dreams. He wrote them down for 2 or 3 weeks. And then a couple years after college, he wrote them down once again. Three different samples from about 18 to 24, 25. And all of those samples, the percentage of characters in his dreams who were men was far lower than the typical male. What's the story of his life? His father died before he was 2. His mother did not remarry till he was 10 or 12. His best friends are women. He doesn't have much interest in hanging out with men. Men are not part of his cognitive psychological universe. So it shows up in his very low, what we call male-female percent, and it fits very much with his waking life. So I now know his concerns are with men are very small. But then I can look at his interactions with men in his dreams and say, well, what's his conception of men? Are they supportive? Are they dangerous rivals? Are they people to play sports with? So I can know how big a deal your mother or your father, your sister, so on, is in your life. And I can also know whether you conceive of them as supportive, as weak, as domineering of you, and so on.
Now, we've sort of debunked Freud and Jung here and their therapeutic ideas about what dreams mean. Do you think that there are therapeutic applications to analyzing people's dreams?
Well, I think that talking about any private experience, I think we now know, writing them down for that matter, talking about your daydreams, talking about your dream, talking about your thoughts, sitting down at the end of the day and thinking through it and writing it down, can be useful for many people. And the same way with dreams. In other words, I think they're part of a general subjective package that we could talk about when we've externalized it, when we've objectified it, when we've looked at it on paper, or we've talked about it to someone else. It helps us to gain perspective. As far as dreams specifically in therapy, my belief is that for some people, it's the best way for them to talk about themselves. Say the patient comes in and they're not comfortable disclosing, as we say today. They can't say, I like this or I like that or I don't like so-and-so. But if you ask them to tell you a dream, they're often able to. And the point there is, they, something I mentioned earlier, they don't quite see themselves as responsible for the dream. And they'll say, oh, yeah, I had this dream, and I was kicking my little sister, and then we jumped out a window, and so on. And then you say, well, tell me about that. And then they say, well, yeah, sometimes I get so annoyed with my sister. I did jump off a bridge once when I was a little kid. It was only 4 feet. And they get talking about themselves. So my point is, a dream can become a platform for somebody to talk about their emotions, to talk about their past, to talk about their conceptions of various people. Whether that then actually explains the dream, whether we have now interpreted dream, you see, that's a whole other question. But the dream has provided this basis for the person to disclose about themselves. Now, from there, I think what can happen, it's theoretically very risky, I'll use even the word dangerous and self-deluding for all of us, is that we sit there with this therapist who has a theory, and pretty soon we've constructed a meaning for this dream that is part of a general thing that happens in many therapies where we're really constructing a new narrative about ourselves. I feel rotten, and it turns out that's because my mother or this person or that person did this or that to me. I was wronged in the following ways. And then I learn a language that it's my superego, or I've got these defenses. So I walk away with a new self-conception that can be totally off base. I might feel much better. I might get along with people much better, but that may or may not really connect with what was the reason for my problem. It may or not connect with what the dream means. And so I use that as a run-up to say that this metaphoric interpretation that basically is what everybody's doing can be the fool's gold of dream research. It sounds very compelling. So you see, on the one hand, you can say, yeah, that works. But on the other hand, you say, does this connect with what that dream was about? Well, maybe or maybe not. I guess you can see why that would be upsetting to many people for me to make that claim. Fool's gold of dream research.
Bill, why do you think we dream?
I think we dream because when the brain is at a certain level of activity, and at the same time there's no external input, we're not seeing or hearing or taking something in, and when we've also let go of self, that is when we're not self-monitoring, I think that that's basically the natural state. It's like, what's the rough analogy here? would be with the motors running. You know, there's a certain way when the motor in the car is running, but you have it in neutral. You're not steering it anywhere, so to speak. Here my metaphor breaks down, obviously. That's what we do. So the brain dreams when it's at a certain level of activity. There's no input, and it's like it starts working through memory and other cognitive schemas and pulling them out and constructing things. I guess a better way to put it would be it's when you've got idle time. It's when you're sitting there, then your mind drifts to this or that or the other thing. And indeed, if we put people in a darkened room, hooked them up to the electroencephalogram so we know what their stage of sleep or awaking was, and you have these people say, just relax here in this room, and then every randomly you ask them, what's going through your mind? Now, you know they're still awake because you have the electroencephalogram readings, but they tell you some dreamlike experiences. So it's even possible to have dreamlike experiences when we are awake by physiological standards. And we, most of us, know this best from falling asleep. Sometimes we're falling asleep and we'll startle awake a little bit and say, geez, I was running down the street, or geez, I just shot a basket. Or we're falling asleep and something external will awaken us. Somebody will say, are you asleep yet? Or you'll hear a bell or something and you'll startle up and you'll say, geez, I was just doing such and such or having these images. So I think that's why we dream. Now, but I want to now address what's the purpose of dreams, and here's where, again, the research or what I have to claim, and I think all academic psychologists that have studied dreams would say this, and all clinicians would not say this. I don't think dreams have any evolutionary function. I don't think they have any psychological purpose. Dreams are an accidental byproduct of two great evolutionary advances, sleep and the development of complex cognitive processes. They happen to have at least some psychological meaning in that they tell a story that fits with much of our waking life. But so what I've done here is to say, look, dreams have no function in the purpose in the usual way that we all mean those terms, and certainly I don't think they have any adaptive function the way that social scientists mean that term. But on the other hand, I do think dreams have meaning in the sense that they correlate with other psychological variables, that they make sense in terms of the person's life. And that comes back to the fact that if I have 50 dreams from somebody, and I can say, I'm certain this is a woman, I'm certain that her closest friend is so-and-so, I'm certain her biggest conflict was with such-and-such, and they then confirm those blind analyses, that is, we don't know a thing about the person when we're doing this analysis, then I think we've shown that dreams do have meaning in the psychological sense. But that's different from saying that dreams have a purpose or a function, which is what people, you know, basically mean when they say, why do we dream? We dream because the motor's running.
Bill Domhoff, thank you.
You're welcome.
Psychologist Bill Domhoff conducts his dream research at the University of California, Santa Cruz. His website is www.dreamresearch.net.